When the yellow light comes on, that's when your rebuttal time starts. You can continue talking, or you can say, I'd like to save those 3 minutes, but you're your own judge of your time. All right. Whenever you're ready to begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. There are 3 assignments of errors in my brief, but I would like to focus on the first assignment of error. Today, I'm asking the Court to reverse the trial court's ruling terminating Mr. Britton's obligation to pay child support on May 2010 when custody transferred to Mr. Britton, when there was no pending petition before the court asking for modification. In effect, the trial court retroactively modified Mr. Britton's obligation to pay child support.
Ms. Wilson, let me ask you. I understand that that date of May 25th, 2010 is when custody transferred to Mr. Britton, and he at that time had sole legal and physical custody. What is the effect, and that there was a new order of support entered November 1st, 2011, which required you to pay support. What is the effect of that order that was then appealed and entered January 10th, 2012 in the circuit court?
There is no effect, Your Honor. They are 2 separate orders.
Aren't they competing orders?
No, I don't think they're competing orders, Your Honor. I think they're 2 separate orders. My obligation to pay support to Mr. Britton is completely separate from his obligation to pay support to me. Mr. Britton didn't file the motion. Well, he didn't file the motion for support until November 2011. He got custody in May 2010.
Right. But your contention is that after the 2011 order that required you to pay support, and during this time he had sole custody of the child.
Correct.
And your contention is that after that order, he was still required to pay you. Now, this is child support. It's not spousal support. He was required to pay you child support, although the child was not living with you?
Correct, Your Honor. The child support order is in full effect until there is a modification of that child support order.
And you don't consider the new order to be a modification of the?
No, it's not. Mr. Britton did not petition the court to modify his child support order under the 2006 order.
There's no question that the court, the JDR court, when it entered the November order ordering you to pay support, had authority and jurisdiction to do that.
Correct.
Why doesn't that, of necessity, assent, given the continuing jurisdiction in support matters, once the court enters the new support order, why doesn't that of necessity replace the existing support order?
Because there would be confusion in this. I think there would be confusion, Your Honor, if
the last order, it seems to me there's confusion without it. If you assume that the most recent order is the order that is in place, why doesn't that order become the effective order?
Because there's no automatic termination of a support order. You have to petition the court to terminate the support order, and he didn't do that.
Well, if there was a custody order entered, and then the court subsequently entered a different custody order, granted custody to the other parent, does the parent who subsequently receives custody have to go ahead and ask for that first custody order to be terminated? Or does that just apply to support?
Well, according to the rules, there is no, according to the rules and support, you have to ask the court to terminate. So far as custody, I'm not aware of any rule that the party, once there's a transfer, that party has to petition the court. I'm not aware of a rule, but so far as custody, it's my understanding that you must petition the court.
Thank you.
Okay. In effect, what the trial court did was to retroactively modify Mr. Britton's obligation to pay support. And the Virginia legislature is very clear about its policy that no support order may be retroactively modified, but may be modified with respect to the pending petition for modification, but only from the date.
What would the, I mean, given your theory that the November order does not erase, doesn't change the state of play in custody, I mean, do we determine the arrearage by taking the $500 number, subtracting the $300 number? I mean, how does that work?
Well, it's my understanding, well, initially when I was show cause for the non-payment of child support in 2014, that was my understanding. But when I did the research, I understood it differently, that no, because there are two separate orders. Because otherwise, if Mr. Britton is obligated to pay $500 and obligated to pay $300, then there would be a $200.
When you were show cause, did you defend on the basis of, hey, at most he owes me $200?
Yes.
And what did the court say?
The appeals court said that it didn't matter. The appeals court. I appealed to the appeals court, and they said it did not matter, that it was separate, that my child support order was separate from his child support order.
Was the $300 paid, and is it current?
Today, no, it's not.
Was any of it paid?
Yes, Your Honor. I was paying the child support all the way up until 2014, and at that time I had gotten behind, and then he filed a show cause. And
well, for several years you paid that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't there an inconsistency where you maintain for, 7 years, that you were owed a sum larger than you were paying, but you went ahead and paid, though you weren't receiving yours? And isn't that a inconsistent position, which in effect says that from 2010 until this current issue was brought up, you were taking a position which in effect waived you to claim the interpretation of the order that you now propose?
No, Your Honor. And good pastor.
Well, if you are paying $300 to the person that owes you $500, then you really don't owe him anything.
That was my argument, Your Honor.
Well, isn't it an inconsistent position to that which you are claiming today?
I would say no, Your Honor, based on the rules. In Good Pasture, the appeals court said that a passive acquiescence of non-payment doesn't lay a bar.
When you say the appeals court, which court are you referring to? The circuit court appealing from what was decided in the J&D court?
I'm referring to the court of appeals, what the court of appeals said from a appeal from the circuit court in Good Pasture.
All right.
In Good Pasture, the court said that passive acquiescence of non-payment doesn't lay a bar a party from seeking payment, Your Honor. So whether or not I motion to enforce or show cause Mr. Britton for non-payment of child support, that doesn't lay a bar me from asking for the arrears that is owed on the child support. And Mr. Britton's brief, he said that giving me the arrears would be unjust enrichment. I would refer the court to Jones versus Davis. And in this particular case, the father, once physical custody of a child was transferred to him, the court said that he could not get non-conforming child support payment until he petitioned the court.
Well, and that's based on, I believe it's pronounced Acree. which holds that, which created the exception that if everybody agreed to the change in support and custody, if there was an agreement, the court could essentially go back and fix it. What Jones says is, okay, the order transferring custody substitutes for the agreement to transfer custody. But since they didn't have an order or an agreement regarding the change in support, it didn't matter that it was unjust enrichment. Here we have another order. Why doesn't that order substitute for an agreement regarding the payment of support?
Well, I think that this case, my case is distinguishable from Jones is because the order represented the mother who asked the father to come and get the child. So there was an agreement with the mother for the transfer of custody. There is no agreement of transfer of custody here.
But what Jones says is that the order doing an order transferring custody can substitute for the agreement that was referenced in Acree, doesn't it?
It's saying that in this particular case in Jones, the mother asked the father to come and get the child, and later the father came and got the child. Then there was a temporary custody to memorialize that, and then a final order to memorialize that. So because the mother asked the father to come and get the child, that's why the first prong of Acree was substituted. Here, that's not the case.
But doesn't Jones say that a court order effectively substitutes in for an agreement?
That's not my understanding of the case. My understanding is because the mother asked the father to come and get the child, it was in effect an agreement to relinquish custody.
At page 16 of Jones, it says, we agree that the court, meaning the circuit court's, order transferring custody of Tara to the father substitutes for the Acree requirement that an agreement by the parties regarding permanent custody must be established before credits against arrearages may be considered.
Right, but that was only because the mother asked the father to come and get the child.
Well, I mean, it seems pretty clear that this court was saying the court order doesn't matter if there's an agreement, because she was disputing that there was an agreement regarding a permanent transfer in custody, and the court said that we said the court order substitutes for any agreement between the parties. That is, we now know this isn't a temporary thing. We have a permanent change in custody, and that's enough for the permanent change in custody part of what we need to do in Acree.
That was not my understanding. I see that my rebuttal time is up, and I'll address it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Jennifer Peterson, and I represent Fitzgerald Britton, the appellee. I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal as well.
You don't get to do that.
Okay.
Your appellee, your 15 minutes just starts and goes.
Just starts and goes. Okay. The underlying cause of action is a motion that was filed by my client seeking a clarification. It has been our position that the order in November of 2011 did replace the order from December of 2006. We have the same cause of action, we have the same parties, and we have the same purpose, meaning that the purpose of the order was to support the minor child. Mother and father are both only conduits. They're not beneficiaries of support for the child. As mother did not have custody, she did not have visitation, and she didn't have any contact during that time.
You cite Jones for the proposition that the entry of the custody order substitutes for the agreement. That's why you cite it for.
Yes.
But, of course, the rest of Jones is without an agreement or something else, the original custody order remains in effect. There is a period of time between the original custody order and when he stopped paying and the November order. How, under Jones, can the court do anything about that other than order him to pay the existing child support award?
So in May of 2010, before the juvenile court, there were motions to amend support, which were filed by the mother, There were motions for visitation and custody as well. She appealed all of that to the Norfolk Circuit Court. Once we got to the Norfolk Circuit Court, the court only ruled on the custody and visitation. Mother then appealed that to the Court of Appeals. That was affirmed and remanded. She then applied to the Supreme Court of Virginia, and that was denied. She asked for a rehearing, that was denied, and then it came back down to the Norfolk Circuit Court, and that was in October of 2013. And at that time, there was an order that was entered that allowed, or that required mother to pay father for attorney's fees for the appeal. So there was a pending motion regarding child support, which was just kind of hanging out there.
But it was her motion.
It was. It was
her motion.
But you're
saying that to meet the requirement of there has to be a pending motion that it falls, that would allow, that would give the circuit court the authority to basically terminate the child support as it may.
Correct. And if this court disagrees with that, then we are moving towards more of an ACRI argument. And when we look at that requirement that there was an agreement between the parties that father would no longer pay mother support, there is the letter that he received from DCSE, which told him that his obligation was zero. Their policy at that point then is to send a letter to both parties.
I could understand how the letter could be an agreement between he and DCSE. How is it an agreement between your client and the mother? Well, she's not a signatory to the letter. And even if DCSE sends her a letter, if she didn't affirmatively agree to it at any point in the process, how in the world is she bound by what DCSE says?
One, she never challenged it, which I understand is not her affirming that there is an agreement that he no longer pay her support. The other thing that she did was she filed not one but two petitions for support for father to pay her, along with some other motions that she filed. Some of those were improperly filed. One, I believe, was filed in circuit court, even though it was already remanded back to juvenile court. And then she filed in juvenile court also for a petition for support. She filed six motions to enforce the December 2006 order, which were all denied. They were filed, again, various cases that were not really appropriately filed. They were filed during the motions for show cause against her. They were filed during a motion for inconvenient forum. They were improperly filed, but she did file them, and she had been told repeatedly at that point that the order was no longer in effect, that the order of 2011 had negated that order by operation of law, and she was present at the hearing, as was DCSE, as was my client and myself, when that order was entered. And we were before the Norfolk Juvenile Court, and the judge specifically asked, because she raised the issue of the 2006 order, if there were any arrears owed under that order. Her testimony, DCSE's testimony, and my client's testimony was that there were no arrears.
And you're referring to the November 1st, 2011 order?
Yes. There were no arrears that were owed to her.
And that was the order that required her to pay support to him?
Yes.
Because he had sole custody of the child?
Correct. And I know Your Honors have also asked her about her obligation. She did pay initially, and she had stopped paying in 2013. She's had only payments which have been through enforcement process, no other payments except, I think, a nominal $5. She's currently $9,300 and some odd in arrears. Certainly an award to her at this point would benefit her. It would, one, fulfill her obligation then to pay support, and then two, she would have the excess money for a period of time when she did not have the child in her care. She didn't provide any support for the child during that time. And that's not the purpose of the child support statute. The purpose is for the child to have that support from both parents.
But Jones makes clear that can't replace, if there's a valid order in place, recognizing that you don't concede that part of it, It doesn't matter if she's unjustly enriched. Isn't that what Jones says?
It does say that. But again, going back to that November 2011 time frame, when we were there before the court and they asked if there were arrears, she agreed there were no arrears. Is that not an agreement then, that there wasn't an obligation to pay support from May 2010 until November of 2011?
Do you have a site in the joint appendix where that's recorded anywhere?
I don't, but I do have where, I mean, it's in my brief, both in the trial court and in this court. I think I have that at my desk. If I could just grab that.
Sure.
The order itself reflects no arrears owed as well.
But it doesn't tell us how we get there. It could be that he just had continued to pay the $500. And I realize we're dealing with a J&DR court order there, so it's probably not going to have a lot of detail.
Correct. Also, while looking for that, point out that the mother has never filed a motion to show cause against the father trying to enforce that non-payment. She's only filed motions to enforce and petitions for child support, but never a show cause. So on the brief that was filed in the circuit court, I did mention that the agency confirmed that no arrears existed under the December 6, 2006 order, wherein Mr. Britton was paying Ms. Wilson. And then attaching the order where it reflects that there weren't arrears owed. I believe that that would be the time period that Ms. Wilson would have had to assert that there were arrears owed under the prior order. She mentioned to the judge at that point that there was that prior order, and we were present. DCSE looked up the record, and that's when this order was entered, which didn't allow her any credit for any past due amounts that would have been owed and doesn't reflect any arrears. And Judge, while I agree that Jones v. Davis does say that unjust enrichment is an unfortunate byproduct, there have been cases since that time that talk about the parent-child relationship and the importance of the parent-child relationship. And again, going back to that, the duty of support is owed to the child, and it is not owed to the mother. If she were to receive an award, that would not be for any monies that she had already expended for the support of the child during that period of time when she didn't have any contact or any visitation, and she continues to not have any contact or any visitation. I think that we really need to look at the rights of the child and supporting the child. I think that it would shock the conscience of the average person to know that father was required to pay an award to the mother during a period of time when she didn't have the child. And if you look even at the guidelines for child support, you can see where each parent has an obligation. It outlines what that obligation is, and it just simply on the bottom is who's going to be paying who, because that's the party that is then providing for the child. If you look at her brief, she mentions that non-conforming payments would not be applicable because it was vacation, short periods of times. I don't know if that was an error in the way that she worded that, if it was meant to say not rather than should, but he did provide home for the child. He did provide medical care for the child. He provided school supplies for the child. He provided child care. He provided clothing. He provided activities. He was the sole support of that child from May of 2010 until November of 2011. And he continued thereafter, which would be evidenced by the fact that mother is not paying support, hasn't paid support for a very long time, and is in arrears of $9,000.
No, thank you. Thank you for your argument. Ms. Wilson, you have a little rebuttal time remaining. I think roughly 2 minutes.
At no time did I ever suggest that Mr. Britton did not owe arrears, Your Honor. I filed a motion to enforce the arrears that he owed. She contends that I have not had contact. I do not believe that whether I had contact with her or not does not absolve his obligation to pay child support under the order. And I don't think it's important, but it's not because I don't want to have contact with her. It's per the court's order.
When the support enforcement agency sent out the notice that said that they thought he was in compliance and no longer owed anything, did you receive a copy of that?
Yes, I did receive a copy of that order.
Did you take any action?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because the order, it didn't require me to take any action, Your Honor. That letter, the only thing it did was confirm that they had received notice that custody had transferred. The order does not, that letter does not terminate his obligation to pay child support.
But doesn't it specifically say that his monthly support payment is zero?
Well, at that time. But that is still a letter. It does not.
Well, right. But if you get a letter that says he doesn't owe you a monthly payment anymore from a government agency and you think that's wrong, the natural reaction would be to go, hey, that's wrong. And so I guess Judge Baumgartner's question, if I've got it right, is why didn't you do that?
I don't think I had an affirmative duty to do that, Your Honor.
It's not a question whether you had an affirmative duty. It's just, it's kind of a common sense thing to do.
I just didn't feel that I needed to do that. Okay. It was just a letter, in my opinion, to affirm that they had received notice that that custody had been transferred. And further, on page 11 in Mr. Britton's brief,
doesn't it weigh on the general equitable type concepts that we have at least floating around a little bit in here, like unjust enrichment, not having asserted a position when you knew the contrary was being taken and you were on notice and just allowed that to go on? I mean, you had the government agency which had the duty while you were owed money to make sure you get it, telling the person against whom they would force payment that he no longer owed it. And so they weren't going to be looking out for your rights and interpreted your rights different than what you had turned. Doesn't it bear into those, just those general unjust enrichment, just basic inequitable type of position, inconsistent positions?
Your Honor, at that time, at the time that I got the show cause, I did go to DCSE and asked that they enforce the order, and they told me they could not do that because he was the custodial parent.
Because what?
Because he was the custodial parent, that they will only enforce the order if I got an order from the juvenile court or the circuit court ordering them to make him pay.
You're over time, so unless there are any other questions, we thank you for your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah.